I think because I've lived with anxiety and depression for most of my life, I started to take their seriousness for granted. My nerves and sadness are usually easy to bury beneath the upkeep of day-to-day chores, work, family, and other relationships. But most of the time, it doesn't feel like there's much time remaining to sit and feel my feelings. And sometimes it even feels better to keep myself busy and distract myself from stress, at least in the short term. But I had a therapist tell me recently that what you choose to ignore mentally will find a way of expressing itself one way or another. And that's definitely what happened to me last month. Life caught up to me, and I had a nervous breakdown after the holidays during my last semester at Columbia Journalism. It forced me to really slow down and make a ton of crisis calls, including one to a psychiatrist named Dr. L, who preferred not to be named.
I am kind of losing my mind a little bit. I am having these delusions that the world is out to get me and that I'm being controlled by outside forces. And I've lashed out at my family, and it's just been a very like unstable past couple days.
Did this just happen in the last few days, or has it been building?
I'm not sure. My memory is also just like jumping around. And I'm really confused about what is real, what is going on.
Are you feeling sort of foggy headed, like it's harder to think straight?
Definitely. It feels like my mind is like a movie that keeps skipping 15 seconds forward. I'm kind of like delirious.
The worst actually came the day before, on the train when I was on my way to class. I told Dr. L about it, but found it hard to describe the bare facts of it. And especially what it felt like. That was the scariest part. The racing thoughts. Am I going to make it in time for class? To meet this deadline?
To graduate?
Are my parents going to be okay this week? I wonder if my mom's out of knee surgery yet.
I think she went in at 8 a.m.
Who's going to take care of my stepdad while she recovers?
His Parkinson's disease is getting worse.
What if something happens to one or both of them? I'm the only one of my siblings close by. Full of paranoia and replays of recent conversations with family and friends. I think my brother and sister are mad at me because I'm at school while they're taking care of mom this week. But they're only here for the week and I have so much work left to do. I don't trust that they're not upset.
Is my friend also mad at me?
I haven't come to visit her much lately. Maybe everyone's mad at me.
It felt like my mind and body were separating. I was cramped underneath a crowd of strangers. They carried loud conversations over me as I sat completely spaced out, their voices only filling my mind with more noise. But what really pushed me over the edge was the continuous ringing sound coming from the overhead speaker in the subway car. It wouldn't stop ringing, and after a while I couldn't tell if it was coming from the train or inside my head. That's when I panicked and ran. This is tape from my conversation with Dr. L again.
I got off the train and I went to campus and I knocked on student affairs, sobbing.
It's amazing how much sleep deprivation can cause such horrible experiences. All the things you're describing can happen. You can sort of lose touch with reality.
I was panicking that I'm having a psychotic episode.
You're having some psychotic symptoms.
Okay. Oh, it's so scary.
2 weeks later, during our follow-up appointment, Dr. L told me that I'm experiencing a severe episode of depression. I told him that I've had depression before, but it's never felt like this. I'm normally able to complete the tasks on my plate. He said, I probably didn't notice my condition worsening because I'm used to tolerating high stress levels between family, work, and school. According to him, that's a common experience for people who are, quote-unquote, high-functioning. Before that conversation, I had never heard of depression described in terms of high versus low functioning. It made me wonder, what's the real difference? How did I miss the signs and go from being one to the other? That's what we're going to explore today. This is True Stories in Sound. I'm Tricia Storitz. Monica Band is a licensed therapist based in Washington, D.C., who publicly advocates for people with high-functioning depression. She says, the phrase high functioning is not a formal diagnosis or a recognized clinical disorder. and it's not featured in the most recent Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders, the DSM-5, the authoritative guide used to diagnose mental illnesses. Instead, it's a phrase used to describe people who have depression, but who don't appear to display obvious signs and symptoms. The criteria to be considered high functioning also varies depending on the context a person is living within.
In my mind, you can't talk about high function without thinking about the context, the systems, and the values in which someone is operating in. It really is contingent upon the cultural messages we've received. High functioning in the context of perhaps a developed capitalistic society might mean that I'm able to meet certain milestones and conventional markers of success historically, right? This could be obtaining that job, that promotion, that could be a salary, that could be expression through material possessions.
It can mean a lot of things. But generally, it speaks to the experience of feeling extremely sad while proceeding to go to work and fulfill other life obligations. Family and friends of people struggling with this condition may also assume that their loved one is fine because of their ability to persist despite having depression.
But ultimately, there is often a masking or a dissonance between what is happening internally and then what someone or society is seeing externally.
Band says the term high functioning has been popularized through social media platforms like Instagram and TikTok to raise awareness in those who are suffering in silence. Many posts under the hashtag mention a coping mechanism called masking.
Masking is sort of that process of switching back and forth between someone who is, you know, very professional, corporate, high functioning, what we imagine society wants us to look like, and then back into sort of a space that's more softer and vulnerable, but doesn't feel necessarily psychologically safe to be fully.
Masking is the main reason that this form of depression can be so difficult to detect. Band says it's extremely common for people struggling with depression to have fears about showing vulnerability in group settings. They might be afraid of facing consequences like rejection, humiliation, judgment, or other invalidating reactions to their feelings. And they may believe, consciously or subconsciously, that masking can protect them or offer a sense of belonging and acceptance instead. It's a coping strategy that develops over time and is often learned in early childhood by observing how caregivers manage their own feelings of sadness in front of others. As Ban spoke more about it, I thought about my mom. She worked for AT&T for almost 40 years and spent 20 of them as the vice president of public relations. I remember her being depressed at several points throughout my childhood, sometimes for life reasons and sometimes for work reasons, but she always described her workplace as a high-stress corporate environment. She's retired now, but exploring the concept of masking reminded me of the advice that she gave me the day before I broke down at school.
The other day when I was not doing well and you gave the advice to put a game face on. Can you tell me, like, what is a game face? What does that look like?
I think for me, a game face is just being able to complete the task at hand without revealing to anybody that there's something amiss emotionally.
Was that something that you felt that you had to do a lot in your own career?
Always. Pretty much always, yes.
She told me she learned to mask after seeing many of her colleagues get sidelined or laid off for expressing personal challenges and managing the stress of their jobs.
It wasn't a very high trust environment. At least I never felt that way. I don't really know. But I certainly had seen enough in my time at work to know that I didn't think it would end well for me to reveal too much about what was going on with me mentally and emotionally.
It started to make more sense where I learned to mask. I'm less confused about why all of the stresses I've been burying came to the surface in such an extreme way that day on the train. But learning all of this almost made me feel even more depressed. It's sad to me that my mom and I have both felt the need to hide our authentic feelings just to achieve some form of acceptance or success. I needed to know more about the long-term consequences of living like that. This is Dr. Band again.
So I think going back to folks who are highly functioning, wonderful thing that you have a high tolerance to achieve these things. And you probably have a really high tolerance to experience a lot of dysregulation. You probably absorb quite a bit. And it doesn't seem on the outside that it affects you, but it absolutely does.
Band explained to me that people with high-functioning depression often feel isolated, exhausted, and chronically disconnected from themselves. They also experience higher rates of burnout and life dissatisfaction due to feeling that they've been socially or professionally rewarded for hiding their true feelings at school, home, or in the workplace. And because they've still been able to meet external benchmarks of success despite feeling depressed, they may not realize that their condition is debilitating until a crisis hits. And that can make the experience of it all even worse.
You have to interrogate that uncomfortable truth that crisis response, while helpful, perpetuates and encourages a cognitive dissonance in us, right? We don't have to think about these things till a crisis happens. It came out of nowhere, right?
That's how I felt. My depression came out of nowhere. I had to quickly find a way to manage intrusive symptoms that made completing my work feel nearly impossible. Most of my days have been taken up by trying to find the right combination of medication and support to finish my program, even though realistically I know it's going to take weeks for me to fully stabilize. I've been showing up to class unable to hide my depression anymore, and I've been forced to truly sit with my feelings. And somehow it feels like I'm doing it for the first time, even though they've been sitting beneath the surface for way longer than I want to admit to myself. It's made me think, it almost doesn't really matter if you call it high or low functioning depression. Maybe depression is just depression, and maybe masking doesn't always work in front of everyone. My mom, for example, tends to see through mine.
Do you see me as someone who masks her emotions?
I think you do far less masking than I ever did. I think that's partly generational because it's much more acceptable to talk about mental health struggles now. I think that's a good thing. So I don't see you masking the way I mask. I sometimes wish you would. And I think that it will become necessary in certain moments going forward, because unfortunately we don't live in an enlightened world. And, you know, I don't want to see you penalized because of moments of vulnerability. Mm-hmm. Right? When it's not necessary, and they do pass.
You wish I would mask.
I think there's a place for masking. 2 weeks ago, we were in a scary place. 2 weeks later, here we are, right? You look good. Everything seems to be fine. I don't want you to be in a place or in a work environment where if you don't mask in that scary moment, 2 weeks later when you're in a much better place, but you've left an impression that's now going to follow you, because I think there's a lack of understanding about the ebb and flow of how mental health really works. So I do think that masking performs a valuable function to get you through some tough moments if you know the world that you're living in.
I think where I struggle to reconcile my way of being up against that way of thinking is I can see how that could work in the short term to get past, like you said, the intense moments. But what about long-term health and creating an atmosphere where other people feel that there's permission to be vulnerable or there's safety in the general environment to come forward with those things?
I think that there's a difference between being in a moment of crisis and being in a moment of clarity where you can create an environment around you where people feel free and you can give them the benefit of your insight and your thoughts and your compassion. When you are in crisis yourself, you're in no position to really help other people because you're just trying to hang on and help yourself, right?
I'm not sure I fully agree with my mom. I'm still very much in the middle of my crisis, and for weeks I've been talking to other students at Columbia about how they manage their own depression. I've been asking them if they feel the same pressure to mask that I do, and if they feel isolated in that experience. Everyone has been so vulnerable and honest, and sharing my feelings while hearing theirs has made me feel less alone. I can hardly believe how much we all seem to have in common. Here's what Jackie Mono had to say.
I think the reason why I'm so like high functioning, I'll use like a project I'm obsessed with to distract myself from all the dark thoughts. And like, I'm one of those people who's really better off being busy, which I think is good to an extent, but I do think it kind of feels like I'm just running away from things because I'm distracting myself so much. Another thing is that like, if I tell someone that I'm struggling mentally, they don't believe me because I do well in school. They're like, if you were really that depressed, then you would be flunking out, your grades would be bad. It's just kind of hard to get believed, you know?
Chiche Onike agrees.
To the outside world, when you're perceived as accomplishing a lot, you don't think that people will even agree with you if you say, oh, I'm sad or I'm scared to do this. I associate anxiety with just being in fear and letting that fear stop you from moving forward, and not so much being anxious while still getting things done. I know for me, it's why I never checked on my own anxiety, because I was still getting things done. What depression used to look like to me was just the commercials, like just sad all the time and not being able to break that. But then growing up teaches you, you could be sad all the time and have the most smiling, beaming energy. It's very possible to live in those both worlds. And just because you're getting through it doesn't mean that the issue is being taken care of.
And for Kristen Cashwell, masking depression has led to severe consequences.
I'm able to persevere and continue to do the stuff that I need to do until I can't. And then I experience like a full shutdown. And I think I've probably had maybe 4 or 5 full shutdowns over the course of grad school, where my body just kind of gives up and is like, nope, like we're not doing anything. I get tearful and I like cry, but I'm laying in bed for anywhere from 8 to 24 hours. Something I struggle with is being able to differentiate between this is mental illness versus feeling like I'm lazy and just not trying hard enough and I just need to be a bit more resilient. I feel like that maybe stops me from asking for help or like communicating my needs.
Opening up about mental health is not easy, and while high-functioning depression may come with coping strategies that effectively hide signs of distress, deep sadness still sits beneath the surface. It needs to be exposed, it needs to be discussed, and it needs to be dealt with. Maybe terms like high-functioning and masking have created a space for greater acknowledgement. They certainly have exposed the reality that too many people desperately want to talk about their depression, but are afraid to. Throughout the process of reporting this story, I learned that I'm not the only person who's experienced debilitating symptoms or breakdowns while at Columbia. That became abundantly clear when dozens of other students came forward as I was looking for sources. And all that tells me is that there are a lot of us suffering in silence. But the good news is, we're talking more about it. To me, that's the first step toward becoming a more enlightened world. One that breaks cycles of shame and creates workplace cultures that are more balanced and healthier for everyone. This story was reported, written, and produced by me, Trisha Stortz, and edited by Daniel Alacron. Music from Blue Dot Sessions. Special thanks to my mom, Patricia Stortz, my partner, Anas Hamid, and my classmates Jackie Mono, Chichi Onike, Kristen Cashwell, and everyone else who shared their story with me. To hear more deeply reported stories from around the world, visit truestoriesandsound.org. Thank you for listening.